cushion on top of the ball. It was going to slide off. Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
What a nice half circle. In the last few weeks, we've been doing a series of talks on the paramitas. In Theravada Buddhism, there are 10 paramitas. They're perfections of character. And the descriptions of them were the Buddha's attempts to say it's not enough just to have a personal awakening, that you have a responsibility to manifest this in the world, and this is how you do it. So this is the point at which the Theravada path, which sometimes is sort of blamed as being selfish because all you want to do is wake up for yourself, and the Bodhisattva path from the Tibetan tradition, which says you set aside your own awakening to support the awakening of everybody. What the 10 perfections do is say we're all on the same page. This is really what it's all about. So the 10 perfections are generosity, virtue, renunciation, discernment, persistence, endurance, truth, determination, goodwill, and equanimity. Now, these words that I've just read are the translation by Tanisaro Bhikkhu. And sometimes people use different words for these. Sometimes goodwill is translated as loving kindness. Sometimes discernment is translated as wisdom. So it's, in case it feels like a word you haven't heard before, that's why you might have heard somebody else's description of it. So what the perfections tell us is that it's not enough just to be really good at sitting still and meditating. It's not even enough to have deep absorption and concentration states that give us powers. The Buddha didn't say there was anything wrong with those. He just said it's not enough. That what you need to do is to walk into your life. And that this really points to the fact that awakening happens in life. It doesn't happen anywhere else. It really happens right here. One of the things I was reflecting on about Sangha, about a spiritual community, is that in a monastic community, you have more than 200 rules that tell you what to do and how to behave, and you wear a robe, and you live in a certain place, and you have all kinds of things that tell you this is the group that you belong to, and this holds the group together. In a sangha of householders, we rely on our relationships, on our trust that we're going to be careful with each other. And that's what the paramitas talk about, is this is how you do it. These are the things you need to be careful about. So today I want to talk about discernment, which is sometimes the word wisdom is used to describe this particular paramita. And I want to talk about what discernment is, about how you acquire discernment, but also about what's the content of discernment. So how you get wise, and what do you have when you're wise? In the Digha Nikaya, the Buddha listed 3 types of discernment, of ways to acquire discernment. The first is understanding that comes from listening. Well, you listen to teachers, you listen to audios and videos, you listen to books. Reading is a kind of listening. You listen to friends. And this was talked about many times about the importance of friendship in our development of discernment and our spiritual path. Friends that support our discernment, that point out to us when we're on track and when we're not on track. That is so precious and so valuable. So understanding that comes from listening. Then there's understanding that comes from thinking, from reflecting on what we're seeing and what we're experiencing, evaluating it, investigating it. So again, we're using our intellect to really examine what's happening and what does this mean? How does this fit with other things that I know and understand? And the third way to acquire discernment is getting understanding that comes from meditation. And that is direct experience. That is a wordless experience that underlies the experiences of thinking and listening and talking and interacting. All those ways of acquiring discernment are important. We use them all at different times. There isn't one that's better than the others. I think most of us understand that, or at least many of us understand that in our particular heart mind, one of these is strongest. One of these is our greatest doorway. So for some of us, it may be going to that cushion and sitting. For others, it may be going for a walk and reflecting. For others, it may be reading, really taking in the wisdom of others. I also want to talk about the content of discernment. What does this mean? What is it that we take in? In the Four Noble Truths, in the Eightfold Path, the wisdom steps on the Eightfold Path are wise view and wise understanding. So wise view basically is understanding the truth of the Four Noble Truths. So in this circular way, it points us right back to the beginning, seeing clearly that, boy, life is challenging. You know, there's nobody sitting in this room that hasn't had really difficult things happen in their lives. There is no way to escape aging, illness, death even, and loss. We lose what we love because it's constantly changing. And the second noble truth is that we suffer not because those things are happening. They're unavoidable. I love what Christine Connor said in one of our classes, that she said somehow she finds it comforting to know that this happens to everybody. She just nailed it for me. That's why this is really important. There's something comforting to know that everybody faces these challenges. So we suffer not because of those challenges, but because we don't want them to happen. Somehow we think we don't deserve it. It shouldn't come to us. We know that it happens to other people, but it shouldn't. It's not our turn. This shouldn't be something happening to us. And we suffer. We have that stress, that disconnect that pushes away, that says, no, 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 instead of, oh, this is what's happening. And that's the third noble truth that the Buddha said. Right here in the middle of all these things that happen, it's possible to be free of suffering by just opening to what's happening, being present with what's happening, saying, oh, this is, wow, this is challenging. Okay, let's see what's here. What is going on? And then the Eightfold Path tells us how to work with this. So when did you first hear the Four Noble Truths? Can you remember the first time you heard that teaching? When was the first time you actually remembered it? And I say that because I can remember. I probably heard it several times before I finally remembered what the four were, what the whole list was. And once you had it, you had it. It couldn't be otherwise. It was so logical and sensible. When did you begin to really understand it? When did you begin to have the direct experience of the truth of it? As we work with this, we begin to see increasing levels of subtlety in how we experience this. The other really important aspect of the content of wisdom is understanding the nature of relative reality. That everything in our relative world is impermanent and constantly changing. My husband, when he heard this teaching, because he has a science background, could say he knew that every 7 years, every molecule of your body was different. And it didn't happen all at once. It was a constant process of change. It's not possible to avoid the constant flow of change. The second characteristic of reality is unsatisfactoriness, which is basically because we can't keep it from changing. And we begin to realize that because of that, there really is nothing in mundane reality that will bring us permanent satisfaction, permanent happiness. That happiness will come and go, just as unhappiness comes and goes. When it comes from our interactions with pleasant and unpleasant things in our daily lives. And the third characteristic of reality, and the most challenging, is that this truth applies to who we think we are, to this self, this one that we call ourselves. Even this, every 7 years, every molecule has changed. So 7 years ago, was I the same person that's sitting here now? And who's the one who's sitting here now? So the content of wisdom is really knowing suffering, the causes of suffering, and the end of suffering. And it's related to these aspects of mundane reality, of relative reality. But you know, you can't have a relative reality without an ultimate reality. And that ultimate reality underlies every particle, every second of relative reality. We have glimpses of that, fully awakening means that we're awake to that all the time. I aspire to that. I would like to be constantly aware of that ultimate reality. You all know that I love poetry because the words take you to a wordless place, and so I have a short little thing to end with. This is from Naomi Shihab Nye's book, a collection of poems called Words Under the Words. Answer if you hear the words under the words. Otherwise, it's just a world with a lot of rough edges, difficult to get through, and our pockets are full of stones. Answer if you hear the words under the words.